It's likely the start of fall in 2016, and Anthony Tan had mixed emotions. Over the last few years, Uber had been making inroads to all of Grab's priority markets and more, insidiously entering the entire Eastern Hemisphere before finally stopping in their tracks in China with Didi Chuxing, China's version of Uber. In what was recorded as a lower estimate of their money bloodbath, some 2 billion yuan was given away as promotions for rides. That's at least 400 million US dollars, burnt like dross paper in the sky. Tensions rose in May 2016 when Uber raised another $3.5 billion from Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, while Didi received another billion from Apple. It seemed the money-burning insanity would never stop until Uber decided they'd had enough. By the 1st of August 2016, a deal was reached and it became widely known that Didi pushed Uber out of China. Anthony was desperate to learn the secret. How did Didi succeed?
Luckily, their connections with SoftBank, a pivotal investor, enabled both Anthony and Cheng, the head of Didi, to meet in their office. The room had the steady hum of an air conditioner, and in the dim light, the large teak table separating Anthony and Cheng gleamed. Anthony's eyes, bright and searching, looked directly at Cheng's tired demeanor.
"You know, Cheng,"
Anthony began,
"I've been wanting to learn the war stories behind Didi's victory against Uber."
"It wasn't just strategy, Anthony. It was survival. At one point, it almost killed us."
Anthony raised an eyebrow.
"Really? How so?"
Cheng leaned back, memories flooding his thoughts.
"Oh, there were nights, especially during the most intense cash burn, when we were terrified. We thought we wouldn't have enough to pay our employees the next day."
Anthony's eyes widened.
"And we had to literally go over to some of the big entrepreneurs' homes and ask for money that very day, just to cover salaries. It was painful, but necessary."
"That's intense. I knew the battle was fierce, but I never realized it got to that point."
Cheng nodded.
"To galvanize our team, we constantly reminded them of the stakes. We warned them that if they failed in their analytics, especially during the intense cash burn, well, we'd not only lose against Uber, we'd die."
Anthony leaned back, absorbing the gravity of Cheng's words. He thought of Grab's own battles and struggles, and the realization hit him hard. To win against a giant like Uber, it wasn't about holding back or calculating risks.
To beat Uber, they must fight street by street, risking everything but death. From 1UP Media, this is Empires, episode 4 of a 4-part series, Uber versus Grab, Street Hails and Street Fights. Uber versus Grab is more than a corporate clash. It's a battle marked by distinct regional characteristics and complex cultural nuances. Uber, the Western Goliath, entered the Asian market in 2013, but struggled to adapt. Despite its vast resources, it misunderstood the diversity within Asia. Southeast Asia isn't a homogeneous entity. It's a complex mix of distinct countries, each boasting its own unique language and culture. Uber's expansion was hampered by its initial inability to grasp this diversity.
Meanwhile, Grab, the Eastern David, thrived.
Right now, first on CEO and co-founder Anthony Tan.
It wasn't just a local player, it was a local champion.
Congratulate you, because I know this is a milestone and something that you've been looking forward to for quite some time, Anthony. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about what you're going to do with the cash. And this really is a super app. You almost own.
Grab understood the fragmented cultures and languages of Southeast Asia and tailored its operations to suit each unique market. Where Uber was still finding its footing, Grab was already sprinting ahead. Uber CEO Dara Khosrowshahi would later characterize their clash as a street fight. Grab's team, echoing the combative spirit of their leader Anthony Tan, adopted guerrilla tactics, moving swiftly and strategically to claim city after city.
Anthony Tan's approach was grounded and hands-on. His methods, whether distributing free meals or offering affordable smartphones, were targeted and tangible. Every action was aimed at bringing more drivers into Grab's fold, ensuring the company didn't just grow, but thrived amidst the competition. Early employees of Grab still remember the guerrilla tactics they once employed to expand the company's network. They would target areas with long queues of taxi, airports, food centers, and the like. A two-man team would then join the end of these lines, engaging the drivers. One would passionately explain the benefits of Grab, while the other stood ready, tablet in hand, to sign the intrigued drivers up on the spot. By the time the taxi reached the front of the queue, the team would exit, often leaving behind a newly minted Grab driver.
This hands-on approach wasn't confined to daylight hours. In fact, almost every new sign-up could find round-the-clock account servicing. Drivers working at night found Grab's account managers right there with them, reflecting a commitment that went beyond the usual 9-to-5. As the driver network expanded, Grab ditched the taxi queues for gas stations and pop-up shops, setting up client service desks. Back then, it was as grassroots as it gets. A plastic table, a chair, and a mission. Here, future Grab drivers would simply sign up, receive training for the app, and be off their way. Today, most Grab centers are large and air-conditioned, with the capability to serve hundreds of drivers in a single day.
Throughout this time, Uber was hot on its heels, expanding with a pace and aggression that mirrored Grab's own tenacity. Sometimes their client service desks stood side by side, a physical representation of the exploding rivalry that was quickly spanning cities and countries.
While Uber was neck and neck with Grab in terms of expansion, it hit a snag when it came to vehicles. In countries like Indonesia, the Philippines, and Vietnam, less than 10% of households owned cars, a stark contrast to the 90% car ownership in America.
Uber, rooted in the sharing economy, was built around the idea of putting idle, privately owned cars to work. But in Asia, where car ownership was a rarity, the company found itself at a disadvantage. Grab took the lead, capitalizing on the abundant taxi fleets. Uber's response was slow, hindered by delayed product updates and communication gaps between Singapore and Silicon Valley. In fact, it took them 21 months after their Singapore debut to roll out the Uber taxi feature.
To counteract the sluggish growth, Uber introduced car ownership services like Lion City Rentals in Singapore and ramped up driver incentives, sending the industry into a whirlwind. Drivers were pulling in an extra $1,000 or $2,000 Singapore dollars weekly. And in a city with about 20,000 private car drivers back in 2014, the incentives were tantamount to a windfall, flooding the market with millions every month. Uber didn't stop there. They also made it even easier to cash in. Initial requirements like accepting 80% of allocated rides were scrapped. The doors were flung open for a new wave of drivers. Less committed perhaps, but increasing the fleet size nonetheless. This two-pronged strategy, lowering the entry barriers and boosting incentives, proved potent. Grab, known for its stronghold among taxi drivers, started feeling the heat. Uber wasn't just making headway. In cities like Kuala Lumpur, they were signing up hundreds of taxi drivers weekly, chipping away at Grab's dominance.
As for Grab, they couldn't ease their onboarding requirements as much. Rooted in a foundational story of an unsafe taxi ride in Kuala Lumpur, safety was a cornerstone of its brand. The screening of drivers was supposed to be more stringent to reflect its commitment to passenger safety. But in the heat of the competitive war with Uber, even a company as safety conscious as Grab wasn't immune to the pressures. Both giants, caught in a race for dominance, had their moments of compromise. But Uber's "move fast and break things" mantra would prove to be far more unforgiving in Asia.
A horrifying testament to this was the 2014 Delhi rape case. Uber's lax vetting process allowed a driver, previously accused of rape, to slip through the cracks. The consequence was devastating. The driver faced charges of rape, causing harm, and criminal intimidation. Uber's response to the incident displayed an alarming level of insensitivity, with internal communications suggesting that the victim was collaborating with rivals to tarnish Uber's reputation. Yet astonishingly, Uber's business didn't falter significantly across the region. Discounts and convenience kept users and drivers hooked, even with safety risks lurking in the background. As the new year approached, the Grab-Uber conflict escalated into a relentless incentive battle to attract drivers, each company hemorrhaging cash with no end in sight.
Uber and Grab were locked in a fierce struggle, not just for drivers, but also for riders. It was in this arena that Grab's regional insights and agility became a powerful advantage. A substantial 70% of Southeast Asians were unbanked or underbanked, underscoring the necessity of cash payments, a feature Grab embraced early on. Uber, on the other hand, was slow to adapt, initiating cash payments only in 2015. 2 years post-launch, and initially, just in India.
Another major hurdle in the region was the notorious traffic congestion. Cities like Manila, Jakarta, and Bangkok had commuters spending twice as long in transit compared to those in San Francisco, Uber's hometown. The response to this challenge by many locals was simple: opt for two-wheelers, particularly motorbikes. A nimble alternative capable of navigating through the gridlock. In 2014, households in countries like Thailand, Vietnam, Indonesia, and Malaysia were 5 times more likely to own a motorbike compared to the US. Grab was quick to tap into this preference, introducing motorbike ride sharing, a move that addressed the traffic issue. In fact, so prevalent were motorbikes that it spawned a formidable competitor named Gojek, a name derived from ojek, the Indonesian word for motorbike taxis, combined with the word go.
Uber, however, was sluggish to adapt. It took them a substantial 17 months to respond to Grab's motorbike service, a delay that cost them valuable market share. In the cutthroat race to dominate the ride-hailing landscape, Grab's intimate understanding of local nuances, along with their ability to swiftly adapt their tactics and strategy, were proving to be game-changing advantages. Grab further nailed localization in its marketing. Anthony Tan, the founder, didn't just observe the local culture from afar. He moved his family to Indonesia to get first-hand experience.
Thank you and enjoy your flight.
This approach influenced Grab's marketing strategies, leading to some eye-catching campaigns.
In the Philippines, a partnership with Globe Telecom allowed Grab to connect with customers via SMS. In Thailand, the company bought ad space with Thailand Air Asia. And to strengthen the brand's connection with local consumers, Grab collaborated with popular regional brands like Wonder Coffee, Kit Kat, and Revive Isotonic. As the war waged on, both Grab and Uber had to turn increasingly creative. Uber kicked off Ice Cream Day, delivering different flavors of ice cream to users, thanks to a partnership with Food Panda and various ice cream brands. Grab countered with a Durian Day, delivering the smelly yet beloved fruit directly to customers. Both campaigns had their hiccups, melted ice creams for Uber and missed durian deliveries for Grab. But they highlighted each company's push to win over customers with creativity, even if it meant giving away desserts and fruits.
As the rivalry raged into 2017, both Uber and Grab were fortifying their war chests. By the end of 2016, Anthony Tan secured another $790 million from Masayoshi Son's colossal SoftBank Vision Fund, more than tripling their initial funding. On the other hand, Uber was not left behind. It pulled in an additional $3.5 billion from Saudi Arabia's Public Investment Fund and secured $1 billion of debt financing from major players like Barclays, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, and Morgan Stanley. Clearly, neither was backing down. If a financial showdown was what it took to clinch victory, both were ready to pull out all the stops.
On the Chinese calendar, Travis Kalanick, the CEO of Uber, is born in the year of the Fire Dragon. Impulsive and confident, Fire Dragons make and break relationships with equal fervor. 2017 was projected to be a stellar year for these creatures. So bright, in fact, that their glaring success may attract jealousy and envy. It is cautioned that in this year, a fire dragon like Travis Kalanick had better show modesty, or years of ruthless enemies and problems would come knocking on his door for revenge.
It's February 2017, and Travis Kalanick had just booked an Uber. The driver was Fozzie Kamel, And the moment he saw Kalanick, he knew that was Uber's CEO. If you had access to their car camera, you would see Travis dancing along to Maroon 5, sandwiched between two female friends. Travis doesn't realize it, but Kamel has had a growing resentment building up inside him. Kamel's mind spiraled back to a time when an Uber account manager, with eyes gleaming with confidence, had painted a future so bright it was almost blinding. He remembered the promise vividly.
You're not just a driver, Kamel. With Uber, you're stepping into a world of stability and substantial income.
The memory of it was as clear as day. The manager's voice, authoritative yet inviting, unveiled the prospect of driving premium cars.
These select models worth $97,000 aren't cheap, but neither would your pay if you're with us, Kamel. We've done the math. With our service, you'll be able to afford this car and then some.
Every mile Kamel drove, every face that appeared and disappeared in the backseat of his vehicle, was a stinging reminder of the gulf between those gleaming promises and his lived reality. The stable, substantial income was a joke, and the premium car turned into a prison of debt.
Our drivers are important to us. Every one of you is valued and essential.
Fozzie Kamel belonged to a group of drivers that were left in debt after Uber recruited them with false promises about their income. So severe was the issue that the previous month, Uber was forced to pay $20 million to settle these allegations made by the Federal Trade Commission. As the ride was approaching its end, Fozzie Kamel had to take his shot. He had to understand why this was happening and voice his complaints.
The camera, if one was watching, would capture the moment. A CEO and a driver, worlds apart, yet inextricably linked by the narrative of Uber. Kamel starts first by introducing himself as one of the old drivers, the ones that joined in 2010, shortly after Uber began. The music ends as they begin a curt discussion on the industry before Kamel takes the offensive.
You're raising the standards and you're dropping the prices.
The music had faded and Kalanick could either leave or take the bait. He chooses to take it to disastrous consequences. Tensions escalated as Kamel admitted,
I'm bankrupt because of you!
In true Kalanick fashion, this gets him even angrier, and he decides to storm out of the car. But right before doing so, he pauses. He knows the exact words to make Kamel feel terrible.
Some people don't like to take responsibility for their own shit. They blame every single thing in their life on somebody else.
As luck would have it, a camera did watch Kalanick's every action, and when the footage surfaced, the impact was immediate and damning.
A lot of people talking about this morning. What you're about to see starts as an argument between the Uber CEO and an Uber driver over fares, but then it escalates into personal insults. The video sparking.
Before this, Uber could have been given the benefit of the doubt, a company in a relentless pursuit of growth. Perhaps unaware of the collateral damage it left in its wake.
The 40-year-old CEO seen riding in the back seat of an Uber, speaking with two companions.
But this video, this unguarded moment, stripped away that possibility. It laid bare a stark truth. Kalanick, the figurehead of Uber, appeared indifferent to the plight of the drivers. The narrative of a company unknowingly causing harm began to crumble. In its place, a more unsettling story emerged, where the CEO seemed unmoved even as testimonies of financial ruin from their most valuable assets, the drivers, mounted. Despite his subsequent apologies, public sentiment remained unconvinced.
The remainder of 2017 unraveled into a series of public relations nightmares for Uber. Grayball, a tool used by the company to deceive authorities where they were operating illegally, came into the limelight. The revelation triggered a cascade of internal crises, leading to a fractured leadership and some high-profile departures. Each week ushered in another damning headline for Uber. Allegations of sexual misconduct and tools designed for corporate espionage surfaced, painting a grim picture of a company whose move fast and break things philosophy seemed to have backfired spectacularly.
By June 2017, amid growing pressure from major investors, Travis Kalanick resigned. His successor, Dara Khosrowshahi, formerly of Expedia, presented a stark contrast to Kalanick's combative leadership style. Where Kalanick was known for his relentless and, at times, ruthless approach, Khosrowshahi championed inclusivity and sustainable growth. Taking the helm at Uber, Khosrowshahi quickly recognized the overextension of the company's global footprint. Amidst the tumult, it dawned upon him that perhaps a retrenchment and refocus was necessary. A realization that a strategic call is in order.
It's early 2018 in an undisclosed location in Los Angeles, and Dara is rushing to a meeting. The last 6 months since he joined Uber had been a roller coaster ride. Alongside solving multiple lawsuits, public resentment, and company chaos, he still had to manage competition. One of them was Grab. And every few weeks, the news and reports were painting a painful picture.
In tech news tonight, Grab enters Cambodia, opening a new battle frontier against Uber.
DiDi and SoftBank to invest $2 to $2.5 billion in the largest single finance
deal in Southeast Asia with ride-hailing services.
Hyundai is investing in Grab. Grab's biggest rival serves Southeast Asia corporate travel management.
It seemed like the war in Southeast Asia would last forever, as both sides continued to match offerings, expand features, throw promotions, and pursue every partnership they could find. Deep in thought, but not distracted, Dara enters the meeting room. Across from him was Anthony Tan, the force behind Grab and Uber's prime competition in Southeast Asia. The room fell quiet, pierced only by the distant echoes of LA's hustle. In that silence, their eyes locked. They were combatants, each leading their respective empires. Yet, in this moment, without words, a shared exhaustion and the toll of their enduring struggle was laid bare.
Anthony,
Dara began, his voice steady, but laced with an unspoken respect for their mutual struggle.
It doesn't make sense to continue this street fight, city by city.
Anthony's gaze didn't waver. In the eyes of his competitor, he saw someone different. Someone who was ready to put down the antics and talk. It was different from Travis Kalanick.
We're expending resources, time, energy,
Dara continued.
But to what end? I've been asking myself, is there a scenario where 1 + 1 = 11?
Dara leans forward. He knows Anthony is interested.
We've been so engrossed in this combat, we've forgotten the bigger picture. The people we set out to serve. The user.
Anthony's nod was almost instinctive.
User.
The word hung in the air, a stark reminder of the core purpose that birthed Uber and Grab. It was certain. Both Anthony and Dara We're seeing things clearly.
Though the specifics of the discussions between Dara Khosrowani and Anthony Tan are unknown, there was a palpable shift in the air. A mutual respect and realization of the potential that lay in unity rather than division.
The spotlight moved from territorial expansion to collaborative growth. In this new narrative, the quest for global dominance was set aside, unveiling a new paradigm where partnership and regional expertise were cherished. After rounds of complex negotiations, the world woke up to groundbreaking news in March 2018.
Uber, a global giant, was selling its Southeast operations to Grab.
Immediately, media narratives painted this as a defeat for Uber in the region. However, the reality was more complex. Grab did outmaneuver Uber in the regional race, but Uber did not walk away empty-handed.
Let's unpack the figures. Uber sunk $700 million into its Southeast Asian operations, but walked away with a 27.5% stake in Grab, which is valued at around $6 billion. This meant that Uber realized a return that was more than double its initial investment, demonstrating the strategic pragmatism behind the move. Far from a simple win-lose situation, both companies optimized their positions. Grab secured its regional dominance, while Uber captured a lucrative stake in its former competitor. It seemed that Dara was indeed right. There was a 1 plus 1 equals 11 scenario. As the startup world was caught in the frenzy of joy and wild imaginations of the future, miles away, another narrative, equally profound, was unfolding. Completely divorced from the startup fervor, a loss was being mourned that had swept the globe. On April 5, 2018, just a month after the Grab-Uber announcement, news broke that Isao Takahata, a man whose influence had captured the hearts and souls of countless film watchers around the world, had passed away. As millions mourn, the question remains. With Studio Ghibli's co-founder dead, what will become of it? Next up, we'll dive into Studio Ghibli's hidden chapters, retelling the story and controversies that helped animate the world-renowned animation studio. From 1UP Media, this is Empires, episode 4 of a 4-part series, Uber versus Grab, Street Hails and Street Fights. In the next episode, we interview someone close to the industry to learn more about Grab's many facets after acquiring Uber. And in our next series, we explore Studio Ghibli, the studio that would turn into a global sensation. Empires is a 1UP Media original. Produced and edited by Guang Jin. Audio experienced by Ethan Sam. And narrated by Louise Cruz. A quick word on our reenactments and dramatizations. While we can't know exactly what they say, think, or feel at the moment, it is all based on research. Thank you for listening.